It is Tuesday, September 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, North Korea threatens a nuclear attack on the United States. Australia has a new prime minister, and we hear about the late VOA music show host Willis Conover. It's all ahead. Korea on Tuesday said it has restarted normal operations at its main Yongbyon nuclear complex, and it's warned it's ready to use nuclear weapons against the United States at any time. I'm joined by VOA correspondent Brian Padden, who's in Seoul. Brian, was this expected that North Korea would take such an action at this time? Were there any, you know, discussions that it was reactivating its nuclear program there?
There have been some independent analysts that have been saying for some time, based on satellite images of the nuclear complex in Yongbyon, that the nuclear bomb fuel reactor was again operational. But this was the first time that we've got any official confirmation of it. Why they suddenly announced it today, why they announced yesterday that they are also planning or prepared to launch a rocket, supposedly in conjunction with sending out a peaceful satellite launch into outer space. Why they suddenly did it this week? There is speculation that they're preparing to do a launch on the 70th anniversary of the ruling party of North Korea. That's going to happen in early October.
Both relations between Seoul and Pyongyang recently, there was a certain standoff just recently. But what has been the reaction there in Seoul to the North's activities?
Well, that's right. There has been a very high tension recently, followed by some emergency meetings, followed by some sort of agreed-upon resolution where both sides were going to agree to start talking about future engagement, about trying how to reduce tensions in the future. The first step was going to be a reunion for families that have been separated since the end of the Korean War. Other meetings were promised to be held to further reduce tensions, and both sides promised not to take any more provocative acts against the other. It doesn't come as a complete surprise in the sense that North Korea often tries to walk back historically promises it makes in these meetings. It actually, the day after it voiced regret, that was a negotiated terms that they would voice regret and not offer an apology for planting these landmines in the demilitarized zone that began the whole escalation of tension. The day after they voiced regret, they sent out a statement that basically canceled out the voice of regret.
I thank you very much, Brian, for speaking with me today. That's VOA correspondent Brian Padden. He is in Seoul. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what has been the social media reaction to the increased tensions on the Korean Peninsula?
Well, there's been a lot of concern. As we were just talking about, hashtag Yongbyon is starting to trend now, so more and more people are learning about this, more and more people are talking about it. There is a lot of concern about the escalating tensions, for sure. Some people saying, how dumb can you be going up against the U.S. With a nuclear arsenal? So that's of an opinion, at least here in the U.S., that some people are expressing on social media. And a lot of others saying, oh, it's just saber-rattling. They're just, you know, trying to stir up tensions. The anniversary is coming up, so they're just trying to get on the world stage again, as they tend to do. So a lot of skepticism right now, but people are definitely tracking it on social media. Another story coming out of Asia is the Tokyo Games Show, and specifically PlayStation VR. Now, this is their Project Morpheus that they've been working on for a while, their virtual reality headset. They've announced it as PlayStation VR. It's going to work with the PlayStation 4 console, and it's going to allow people to have 360 degrees all around them. They can use this virtual reality headset. So people are sharing the trailer that they released. There's one very cool shot of a woman, and she's wearing this virtual reality headset, and she looks like she's in a shark cage underwater. So a lot of high expectations for that, and people are very excited about that. And this makes kind of a step towards virtual reality for video games. There have been some other companies, Oculus Rift and others, that have been kind of using virtual reality technology. So this is a big step forward for that. And another big step forward, another trending topic today, Facebook has announced that it is developing a mobile app where people will be able to view virtual reality videos. Now, they purchased a company, Oculus VR, last year, and that kind of marked their step towards virtual reality. So what they're planning on doing, it's unclear how exactly they're going to do this, but they're going to allow people to see videos kind of in 360 degrees through the mobile app. They have camera setups where you have cameras that go all around a scene or an object. They kind of face all outward. And so that would allow people to see that on their phone. So it's kind of an interesting step forward in social media. A lot of people reacting to this, saying this is the new world we live in, where everything's going to be virtual reality. You won't have to leave your house. You can just kind of go go everywhere. And a lot of people very excited, especially for video games, saying the sports games and things, how cool is it going to be to maybe actually be on the field and be with them, your favorite players, and playing some of these, you know, whether it's soccer or American football or baseball. Some interesting stuff for sure.
Yeah, certainly. A whole new world of technology.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Humans aren't the only species who are choosy when selecting mates. A German research team recently conducted an experiment with birds that found the zebra finch is also pretty fussy too, and for good reason, survival of its species. For their experiment, the researchers had groups of 20 female zebra finches freely select their choice of mates from 20 males. Once the birds had paired up, half of the zebra finch couples were allowed to go on their own way, produce baby birds, and live happily ever after. But for the remaining half, the researchers stepped in and broke up the couples. The birds were then forced to pair up and mate with a different companion, one who was just as heartbroken. The researchers found that the happy, self-selected zebra finch couples produced significantly more chicks than the birds in the forced pairings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll have reflections on the late VOA music host, Willis Conover. Malcolm Turnbull was sworn in Tuesday as Australia's new prime minister. He's become the country's fourth leader in just over 2 years. Turnbull emerged as leader of the Conservative Liberal Party following a surprise party vote late Monday that ousted fellow Conservative Prime Minister Tony Abbott. The 60-year-old ex-banker, lawyer, and journalist told reporters he was filled with optimism as he headed for his swearing-in ceremony.
I, Malcolm Blight Turnbull, do swear that I will well and truly serve the people of Australia in the office of Prime Minister, and that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, the Queen of Australia, so help me God.
Well, meanwhile, outgoing Prime Minister Tony Abbott saw his popularity ratings suffer in recent months.
Poll-driven panic has produced a revolving door prime ministership. Which can't be good for our country. And a febrile media culture has developed that rewards treachery. And if there's one piece of advice I can give to the media, it's this: refuse to print self-serving claims that the person making them won't put his or her name to. Refuse to connive at dishonour by acting as the assassin's knife.
Well, for more on this, I spoke with David Holmes of Monash University in Australia. The Liberal Party ousted Prime Minister Tony Abbott. Was this expected? I mean, the country's had so much turnover in just the last few years.
Yes, well, it is becoming something of a pattern in Australian politics. And, you know, people I know from overseas talk about the regular coups now in Canberra. And I can see really on both sides of politics here, Labor and Liberal, that focus groups and polls are really driving a lot of these changes, that they give a leader a go for, say, you know, the first 2 years of their office, and then when it's getting around to election cycle, they intensify the amount of focus groups they do, they take more notice of the polls, and if they figure out that they're not going to win the next election with the current leader, they rapidly move within the respective parties, and this has happened on both Labor and Liberal sides, to remove that leader with using a spill motion.
Yes.
So where anyone can really stand and ask that there's a spill of the leadership, and that they test the vote in the party room, and the winner of the vote, if it's not the sitting Prime Minister, will end up being the new Prime Minister.
Mr. Abbott, in his, you know, outgoing, his last statement as Prime Minister, he blamed some internal leaks. What was he talking about?
He was very upset with the fact that many of his colleagues who are convinced that there's no way the Liberal Party would win at the next election were using a technique of leaking the cabinet, which comprises, you know, all of the most powerful members of the party who are ministers, that cabinet discussions were being leaked to key journalists, even to the point where the media briefing notes for the Prime Minister were even leaked, so that various media outlets were able to report on what they were as they also showed footage of the Prime Minister mouthing the words that they already had copies of. So it was becoming a very impossible position for the Prime Minister, and that by feeding various media outlets, the leakers could sort of engineer the various powers that media in this country has to make a Prime Minister look very, very ordinary and even humiliate.
And Mr. Abbott did also talk about the role of the press, but that's not just unique to Australia, because here in the United States, we have 24-hour news coverage. They do in the UK, I mean, and the same in Australia and in a number of countries. This is sort of a fact of modern political life, though, isn't it?
Well, it is that, you know, the media cycles, the issue attention cycles are now totally integrated with politics. I agree with you. I think it's been particularly acute in Australia, and our fourth estate in Australia, it's able to push things off the agenda that might otherwise suit the government, or it can actually, you know, it can also support governments by getting them on the agenda and pushing other items off. So agenda setting, you know, is a really big issue in terms of whether, you know, politicians are able to get their message through, whether it's about the economy or climate change or whatever it is. But I think what you have in Australia is an acute concentration of media ownership where, you know, one media outlet in particular, which is Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, for example, you know, it owns and controls 72% of capital city daily newspapers. And, you know, the agenda-setting function of that organisation in the morning news in particular is very strong. So, you know, and what you find is that other news outlets tend to take their topics and treatments of agendas from News Limited, so it can actually, you know, really swing the issue attention cycles from day to day, because there is such a powerful concentration there.
I thank you very much, Mr. Holmes, for speaking with me.
No problem, Sarah.
That is David Holmes of Monash University in Australia. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. The late Willis Conover brought jazz and popular music to the world over our airwaves at VOA for more than 40 years. Now, a new archive of some of his recorded programs is being made available to the public through the University of North Texas, their library. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Maristella Fustel of North Texas about the archive and its significance in the history of jazz.
First of all, how did you come to know Willis Conover, and how did the University of North Texas start to store his programs?
Well, the collection was transferred quite a bit before my time. That transfer was made in 1997 through the Willis Conover Jazz Preservation Foundation, which was headed by Leonard Garment. And I arrived as a student at North Texas for the jazz guitar program in 2005 and started working in the music library in 2007 because it was a summer job that was quiet and air-conditioned. I quickly fell in love with library work, and that summer would have been the first time I asked somebody, who's Willis Conover and why is his name everywhere in here?
And I understand that the collection has some of Willis's programs that include people like Louis Armstrong and Stan Getz and several other of the giants of jazz, and now it's being digitized from, they were originally recorded on ferrous oxide tape, like reel-to-reel tape, and now it's being put up digitally, and it's being released to the public through the school's library, right?
Yes, the collection includes a treasure trove of interviews with jazz legends. We have Art Tatum in May of 1955. We have hours, I believe, of Louis Armstrong. We have Dave Brubeck, Kai Vinding, George Avakian. Those are among the early releases. And this came about from the almost 2,100 reels in the Conover collection through a Grammy Foundation grant that we got to digitize the most urgent preservation needs, which are the oldest tapes from about 1955 to 1969. And that's what's made it possible. And we've been able to get the first 10 online with many more to come.
And this is a unique opportunity for people. Many of these artists that Willis spoke with have passed on. And so this is a unique opportunity to hear them discuss what they do and why they did it the way they did, right?
Yes, it's an uncovered chapter in jazz history that we're incredibly excited to be finally making accessible.
There is also an effort afoot to have a stamp made for Willis from the United States Postal Service as someone who was an American pioneer or someone who was a citizen of note, right?
Yes, Willis certainly fits all of the criteria that the Citizen Stamp Advisory Committee states for eligibility to be on a stamp. Having had a tremendous cultural and historical impact in so many spheres, both musical, political, you name it. And so we put out an online petition, which wound up getting over 7,000 signatures. And we got a huge help from people such as Doug Ramsey and his Riftides blog in publicizing that this effort was going on.
And where can people go? There's a website where people can go to hear these interviews that Willis did and some of the music that he recorded live. What is that website?
The easiest thing to do is Google UNT Digital Library and then search on the site for Music Library Conover Collection. And that will give you the 10 recordings plus some of the odds and ends of documents that we've scanned over the years to be able to show people just a small sample of what's in the collection.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us, Maricel. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
And that was some of the music that was played during programs by the late Willis Conover, who was one of the most popular hosts, the most popular host, really, who's ever existed here at the Voice of America. And during the Cold War, a number of listeners in Eastern Europe and also in the Soviet Union listened and learned a lot about the United States and the outside world. Well, that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late December 2013, Egyptian security forces raided a hotel room that housed the makeshift remote studio of three journalists employed by the Qatar-based Al Jazeera News Network. The three journalists, Australian Peter Grest, Canadian Mohamed Fahmy, and Egyptian Bahar Mohamed, were arrested and charged with airing falsified footage intended to damage Egyptian national security, operating without a license, and supporting ousted President Mohamed Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood, a group considered to be a terrorist organization by the Egyptian government. The three men were tried and found guilty twice. In June of 2014, they were found guilty. Two were sentenced to 7 years imprisonment. One received a 10-year sentence. Citing lack of evidence, an appellate court ordered a retrial. That process began in January 2015. The three were again found guilty and, on August 29th, were sentenced to 3 years in prison. The United States is deeply disappointed and concerned by the verdict handed down by an Egyptian court to the three Al Jazeera journalists, Mohamed Fahmy, Bahar Mohamed, and Peter Grest, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby. The freedom of the press to investigate, report, and comment, even when its perspective is unpopular or disputed, is fundamental to any free society and essential to democratic development. We urge the government of Egypt to take all available measures to redress this verdict, which undermines the very freedom of expression necessary for stability and development. By finding these three men guilty, the government of Egypt has signaled that journalists can and will be prosecuted and imprisoned for simply doing their job of reporting the news. The Committee to Protect Journalists reports that as of July 1, 2015, at least 18 journalists are in prison for their reporting in Egypt. Even one is too many.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.